Welcome back to the BizNews Rugby Show. As always, joined by our BizNews Rugby insider, Rory Steyn, and someone who's becoming a bit of a regular on the show, Tim Cocker from Egg Chasers Rugby. So, Tim, you uploaded a video yesterday. I'm trying to remember the title exactly, but it was basically Champions Cup must change. Rory, you watched that as well. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, thanks, Patrick. I have so many thoughts. I was saying to Tim before we got on air that it made my head spin. So first of all, just to welcome from me as well, welcome you, Tim, and just thank you again. I gave you very little notice, as I often do, and as good as you are, here you sit. And the reason I asked you to come onto our show is because there were a few quotes in your video that I wanted to highlight, the one being from Eben Etzebeth, saying, until South Africans get a grip on this and stop moaning about the Investec Champions Cup, we're not going to understand it. So, Tim, I don't have anywhere close to the 30 years of history or the understanding. You've been watching it your whole life. It is a confusing format, and we can kick on to that afterwards, but your video asks a very searching question, and it's this. In an elite, which should be the top level of all of European rugby, is the tournament losing its luster? That's essentially what you were asking. So I'm not going to blather on any longer. I'm going to turn this over to you, Tim, and ask you to, in the most simplified way that you can, set the scene for South African fans who really do struggle. Sorry, so we've got the URC. We're in season four. We've had three seasons of the URC, and that means that there were six finalists, and four of those six finalists were South African teams. Two of them contested the first final, and one of them in each of the others were runners-up. So we get on in the URC, but we are nowhere in the Investec Champions Cup to the extent that this weekend's eight round of 16 fixtures do not feature a single South African team, Tim. So why don't you go ahead and unpack why it is so difficult and why has this once glorious tournament seemed to have slidden a little bit in its appreciation by even European rugby fans?
Well, firstly, it's my pleasure to be here. So hi, Patrick, and hi, Rory. And yeah, you're absolutely right in what you say, that when I think back over my time watching rugby, obviously international rugby is the pinnacle, but just below that were some of these titanic battles between these European giant rugby teams and all of those great players that have won World Cups or Grand Slam Six Nations. Some of the fondest memories in their careers are winning what was the Heineken Cup, is now the Investec Champions Cup. But it was a continental competition that brought together the best against the best. The fans mixing with the fans, clash of cultures, clash of styles. And it was so special that sometimes teams would only face each other once every 5-6 years. And when Toulouse came up against that mighty Leicester team, or the great Munster side of the 2000s would go up against Clermont Auvergne from France, or against an English team, it just, the juices were flowing, the atmospheres were incredible. And it feels, and this is my perception, and this is the question I was sort of tackling as we get ready to get to the knockout stages this weekend, which, as you've said, South African sides are not represented in, it just made me feel that there isn't the same excitement in the air. And why is that? And what has happened? And is it beyond repair? And I think there's a whole lot of reasons in the mix. There's a lot of talk about players playing too many games. You know, look at your South African players. It's a 12-month season. And as you've said, fans in South Africa have just got their head around, and now they're really invested in the URC and get the competition, starting to build the rivalries. Always look forward to Leinster coming over to your shores, or those Munster fans coming over in numbers, and the European trips to go and see how you get on up at Scotstoun on a cold winter's night or whatever. It's really, the stories are there. But for some reason at the moment, the Champions Cup is just lacking the prestige that it once had. I know that it still is very, very important to the players. And it's the biggest shop window outside of international rugby for players. It's the best, the highest level of rugby you can play and win in at club level. But the fans aren't connecting with it in the same way. The sponsorship money isn't there in the same way that it was. And I think part of the reason is that the organisers of it have tinkered with the format too much. It's harder to follow. And the story, ultimately, I just look at sport as it's a different way of telling a story. Sometimes you watch a TV show, sometimes you watch a film. Sport is the same thing. The amazing thing about sport is the stories that bubble under the surface. And I just think all the messing around they've done has just messed with the storytelling of rugby. And that's why fans, not just South African fans, fans are finding it harder to connect with at the moment.
So, Tim, you make two very strong points in that video. And I do encourage the BizNews tribe to go and have a look at Tim's Egg Chasers channel and have a look at that video. The two points that you make are that it's not elite enough, and you back that up by saying that a team that finished, was it eighth in the English Premiership, makes it into the Champions League. That cannot, yeah. And a team that wins only one of its four pool games makes it into the Champions League. How can that be elite? And the other point you make is that there are simply too many teams, which is pretty much the same problem. So, Tim, is it too simplistic? Let me throw this at you. Is it too simplistic just to say, make the qualifying out of the three European leagues, the top 14 in France, the Premiership in England, and the URC, make the qualifying into Champions League and EPCR rugby tough? So let's only have 16 teams qualifying for Europe, 16 in the Champions League, and the next 16, so from 17 to 32, play in the EPCR, because 16 is a very easy number to manage, because it's, you know, you can go into playoffs very simply. But that means that, like where we are now in the URC, we're at the business end. We have a very tightly congested table. Something like, from position, I looked at it the other day, just below the Sharks, who are fourth. I think it's Munster in fifth to the Lions in 14th position of those 16 teams. There's like 8 points that differentiate them. So every game is now important. If you have, and we take the eight top teams to qualify for the playoffs for the URC, but if you said only six of those eight are going to qualify for Europe, it adds extra needle. And the only thing you may lose is you'll have fewer games, which means fewer people through the turnstiles, but and fewer televised games. But the games that you are televising, the games that the sponsors are paying for, are going to be so much of a so much higher quality that what you lose on the one, you gain on the other. Is that too simplistic, Tim?
No, you've absolutely nailed it. Yeah, I think rugby's got into this situation where the money's a bit tight and the financial situation outside of the international game is a little bit shakier generally. Obviously, the top 14 in France is very strong. In England, the UK and Ireland in general, it's a different picture. South Africa obviously has the private benefactors, but wants to eventually be able to stand on its own two feet and be a profit-making business. But yeah, as a result, I think more and more rugby just keeps getting played, and we're always getting stories all the time about, oh, there's going to be a breakaway franchise league, we're going to have a club world cup in a couple of years, there's this competition, the Nations Cup, and it's all trying to get more and more opportunities to get sponsors to pay up for televised games. But you've absolutely nailed it, and I think the NFL in America is the perfect example. Scarcity has a value, and when if you put a limit on something, then it, and the quality is amazing, as you've just identified, then the value of that will go through the roof. And I think they've got themselves in a bit of a death spiral at the minute with the Champions Cup, where more games, less jeopardy, lower quality means the money's not coming in. And I actually think, I do think less is more.
Yes, indeed. And, you know, you mentioned the NFL, quite rightly so. It's whatever metric you use, it's the most valuable sports league in the world. But the second most valuable sports league in the world, again, it depends what metric you use. So if you Google it, you find a couple of permutations. But the second highest league by value is the IPL, the Indian Premier League in India. And it's a mere 7 weeks. 7 weeks, and they're making all that money, billions, $6.2 billion, I think it was at last value, and it's not even 2 months, and we're in it now. We've just started in it now, so absolutely less is more, Tim. So, and how must Heineken be laughing, because they were the sponsors in the good years, and Investec have just taken it up now, and Investec is both a client of ours as a company, but it's also a South African investment bank. They must be scratching their heads and saying, you know, why did we take on the sponsorship? Have we bought something that is devalued? What would your comment be there, Tim?
Well, I guess I don't know what they paid for the sponsorship rights, and if the TV deal in the UK is anything to go by, where it changed broadcaster, and if rumours are to be believed, maybe a third or a quarter of as much money for that TV deal. So maybe Investec got a deal that they're happy with, even with a poorer quality competition overall. I think it can. I think it can get better. It can capture the imagination, but I don't think the changes that I would say are necessary to get it there are going to happen in the short term, at least. I think the current deals we have are locked in for a couple of years. My only concern, therefore, is what will the state of play be in a couple of years' time when it can be tinkered with?
Fair point. And, you know, one of the things you said was that the previous version, when it was the Heineken Cup, was also not perfect, but that you would take that back in a heartbeat, are your words, because at least there was elite level rugby. I cannot get my head around a team that in its pool only wins 1 out of 4 games and qualifies. That is the exact antithesis of elite. So I guess we can sit here all evening or morning, where depending on where you are in the world, debating this, Tim, but at least as rugby men, we've thrown the concerns out there, and I want to thank you for explaining to the South African fans who don't know the history and the wonderful ethos and the just the great matchups that they've been over the years, you know, explaining that to us. And hopefully we can all just as a collective get our teeth into this thing and try and understand why it is that South African teams are underperforming. So I want to, obviously we need to move on to the predictions coming up this weekend. There are 8 matchups in the round of 16, but I want to throw something at you, because you are almost an honorary South African, as I've said before, and it's curious to me, Tim, how can that Springbok-laden Sharks team go and lose this past weekend in the ERC in Durban to a combined Leicester BNC team? It should not happen. Why is it that our ERC / ICC, Investec Champions Cup franchises are unable to get their teams with their Springboks in there to perform at the levels that the Springboks can perform at international rugby? What are we missing? Is there an explanation for that, Tim, as an outsider who understands South African rugby? What is your comment?
It can only be mentality, can't it? Because, as you said, these are incredible players who, as incredible as they are, when they pull on the green and gold, are even greater than the sum of their parts as a collective. And they find something within themselves, that higher purpose, and you know, I've played rugby at a level, not the elite level, but I was all right. But it doesn't really matter what the level is, whether it's schoolboy rugby right up to international. Rugby is one of those sports where when you are really motivated to make sure the person to your right and left, I'm not letting that person down when I'm in the defensive line. I'm going to go to that dark place and get inside the pain cave and go somewhere dark and be willing to do that work, that is an amazing thing. And across 15 men on a field, that's something very special. It's obviously something the Springboks have done over the last 6-7 years. For whatever reason, the Sharks are not, just don't have that. When they're on, they are cooking as a rugby team. But it can only be psychological mentality, and I don't know what the answer to that is. I think John Plumtree seems like a really good guy, and I thought they'd turned a corner around the Christmas period when they were starting to get a bit of momentum. I don't know. I guess the one thing I would also say is, as I've already touched on, it must be tough to be that motivated and that committed 12 months of the year. It's like, when do these players get to just switch off and just be the husband or the dad or the bloke and just go and chill out? Because they have to be constantly on. And I don't know if that's possible.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. And I was, you know, because of my insider knowledge at Glasgow, that is the kind of thing that Franco Smith is really big on. He, you know, he talks about good men make good rugby players. So that means your family, who you are off the pitch. And he allows time for the players to, you know, to get out of that rugby mindset and to switch off. So it's incredible that you mentioned that, Tim, because where I am at the moment in the world is I was asked to do an independent review of a certain financial institution's physical security program. And I use that analogy that you've just used because it's typified, excuse me, in rugby, but it's not just in rugby. I said to them, if you look at the great coaches over history, you know, in the NFL, Vince Lombardi, that the Super Bowl trophy is named after, Sir Alex Ferguson at Man United. And now we've got this maverick, Rossy Erasmus, who's won 2 World Cups with us. I said to them, guys, if you want a team, and this is a business team I was talking to, if you want a team to perform at a level greater than the sum of its individual parts, then everybody has to be on the same page, to quote a cliche, or singing from the same head sheet. That means the coach, the assistant coach, the physio, the masseuse, the strength and conditioning coach, the media person, as well as the captain, his vice captains, and every player has to be on the same page. If you're not, if there's anything that prevents that, somewhere down the line, it's going to find you out. And in this particular case, you know, with the old, another cliche that a fish rots from the head, I said to the leadership, guys, the team at the bottom is sensing the disharmony that lies with you guys. So I think that's one thing that Rossy Erasmus is absolutely clear on. There's no one-on-ones. Everything is said in the open. And if you look at the Sharks, if I may, and I'm not an insider and I don't want to point fingers, but it occurs to me there has to be some kind of misharmony. Is that a word? Disharmony. There's some kind of disharmony somewhere there because we are talking about the same players, you know. So, yeah.
No, I just, you just, you know what popped into my head as you just said that, Rory, was that scene in Chasing the Sun where there was a bit of disharmony between Dwayne Vermeulen and Sia Khaleesi and Eben Etzebeth. And so Rossy just locked him in a room, said, sort it out. When you come out, I want it sorted.
I mean, brilliant man management, right? And brilliant leadership. And not just, and those are 3 A-type masculine personalities, senior Springboks, all 3 of whom had captained the team. And he just told them, you get in there, close the door and sort this out. Done. And they did. Wonderful example, Tim. Thank you for that reminder. Yeah, it's a powerful, powerful piece of imagery from that extraordinary series made by my mates at TNW. What a great job they did, and they deserve every accolade that they received. Okay, Patrick, walk us through these 8 fixtures this weekend, starting with the defending Premiership champions, who are just struggling a bit in the Premiership, but they're playing Clermont. Let's have a look at the fixtures, Patrick.
So so we can hop into the predictions now. Tim, just before we get into each game, do you want to just sort of explain how the teams are seeded, how these matchups are chosen?
Yeah, absolutely. So after the pool stages, every team 1 to 16 had a seeding based on their performance, and 1 plays 16, 2 plays 15, 3 14, and so on. So the favourites for the competition are playing some of the weaker sides, Where it gets really interesting is some of those matchups in the middle, where it's a little bit less predictable.
Tim, what was the point you were making on your video where you talked about this crazy idea of the team carrying its seeding through all of the, from the pool games into the playoffs? Why is that a bad idea? Just help us understand that.
Yeah, but, well, away wins are really, really tough. And players play so many games. So we saw it with the Bulls last year, travelling away to Northampton in the quarterfinal, and Jake White made the decision, do you know what, we've got big URC games coming up. We're going to have to travel to the other side of the world and back. I'm going to have to make a difficult decision. And it looks like, without having to travel across the world, Saracens are going to make that same difficult decision, and they're going to stand down a load of England players, which is unthinkable in years gone by. But part of the reason for that is they're going away to Toulon. And even if they manage to get a win against Toulon, which is a big ask, their prize for doing that is an away trip to Toulouse, the current champions and the favourite for the competition. So I think it's one of those, it's just incentivised teams to not try as hard as they could have otherwise done.
And you cannot have that in an elite league.
No. No, you can't. You really can't.
Let's look at the matchups. So I'm going to allow Tim to go. I'm going to allow Tim to go first, so that I can piggyback off his greater knowledge of the top 14 in the Premiership. So how do you see Northampton hosting Clermont on Friday, Tim?
French teams, and especially Clermont, are one of those sides who are fantastic at home, awful away. Partly because they usually just play a second team in their away games, and they just go all out in their home games. I don't know what they're going to do selection-wise. I suspect it's going to be a Northampton win. And Clermont have a little bit of trouble in the camp. Their coach is under pressure, might be leaving. So I think he may well just focus on the top 14 and just wash his hands of the Champions Cup and send a B team. So I'm going for a Northampton home win, despite the fact that they're also struggling in the Premiership.
Yes, exactly. And by what margin, mate?
Northampton by a couple of scores, by 14.
Thank you. So I'm going to stay out of this. If it's Toulon, if it's French versus French or English versus French or English versus English, I'm going to keep quiet. I'll throw my 2 cents in the ring when it comes to some of the teams that I do know. So we'll just ask Tim to do the predictions for us. How's that, Patrick?
No, that sounds fantastic. I mean, he's the one with the knowledge. So this was a fixture you mentioned earlier, Tim. Toulon against Saracens. Saracens traveling to France with the pretty weakened team. Is this a easy Toulon win?
I don't think any win against Saracens will ever be easy. But firstly, the Stade Mayol on the south coast there in Toulon is one of the rugby meccas. The crowd will be mad. They have that Pilu Pilu guy with the big tattoo on his head doing the chant before the game. And when Toulon win games like this, the tradition is for the fans to tear up the newspaper and just throw it in the air like confetti. So I think you're going to be seeing that, because I think it will be a Toulon win. This was a final in years gone by when Johnny Wilkinson was winning it for Toulon and Owen Farrell and Maro Itoje were playing for Saracens just before Saracens went on to become champions. And I think, you know, in terms of South African representation in that, you would have had Brian Habana, Bakis Botha, Dani Rousseau, and others. So, yeah, I'm sure in South Africa people recognise that Toulon jersey, and I think they're going to make it into the quarterfinals.
That kind of mayhem is exactly the kind of environment that Bakis Botha would have revelled in. He must have thought that was fantastic, these crazy Frenchmen behaving like that, because he was crazy too.
And then our next fixture, this one, Rory, I think you can weigh in on as well. We've got Leinster at home against the Harlequins. But Tim, if you want to give your prediction first and then move it on to Rory.
I mean, Leinster on that side of the draw are the clear favourites. So you've got Leinster on the one half, top seeds on that side of the draw. On the other side of the draw, you've got Toulouse, Bordeaux, Toulon as well. So yeah, it looks like if Leinster play to form, they're not just going to go through this game but to the final. But Rory, we saw with Harlequins in recent years, they've won away in Bordeaux, they won at Glasgow, they've got form in this competition.
Yeah, I was going to say that. And you know, if there is such a thing for me, Harlequins is my English team, Tim, because I think I did tell you I actually have a couple of caps for Harlequins, which is a story for another day. But Harlequins they're a curious team because it's almost as if they and their fans don't mind losing the odd game as long as they pick themselves up by their bootstraps and win one game that, you know, they weren't supposed to win once or twice a season. I mean, that's okay for them. It's almost like, you know, that's their mentality. I'm sure not so much for the players, but certainly the fans seem to think that. And as you correctly point out, I mean, Leinster are Ireland, and they're very hard to beat in Dublin. But if there is such a thing as a team that's good on the road, it is Quins. But I think I'll take a punt here, Tim, and I'm going to say Leinster by 10 or 12.
I think I'd go with you on that one. They are very, very motivated to win, having come so close and lost in several finals. They are
like three in a row, right?
Absolutely desperate. That's why they've signed Ardie Snaiman. That's why they've signed Jordy Barrett. And these are the games that they signed these guys for.
Before we get into the next game, what do you think the odds are of Leinster winning both the Champions Cup and the URC?
I mean, it's going to be really, really tough to win both, as we found, particularly because when you get to the end of the season, it's week on week on week, knockout game, knockout game, knockout game, and they've been caught out with that. In the URC, they tried to rest some players for the Champions Cup and got beaten by Munster in the year.
2 years in a row. And last year by the Bulls. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's really tough, but they have rotated their players a lot. And as Rory was saying earlier, their BC team beat the Sharks away. So they've got some depth. They can confidently rotate, and they've got themselves in a really strong position that they're going to be able to rest players up in the URC between now and the end of the regular season. So I think there's a reasonable chance that the double is on, but they've got the talent, but it's really, really tough.
I agree, Tim. It's well nigh impossible. But if there is a team that can do it, it would be Leinster or Toulouse because of the huge player pool that they've got. So many internationals. Makes it, Patrick.
Another URC team featuring, but this time away. We've got Castres against Benetton. What are your thoughts there, Tim?
This is one of those games where it's I think it's seventh against eighth in the seedings. So these are two very, very well balanced teams, both really good. Maybe both sort of surprise packages in the later stages of the competition, and one of them is going to be in a quarter final. Great opportunity for Benetton, who have some fantastic players. That Menoncello and Brex in the centre are absolutely dynamite. Castres at home are a force. They're doing really well in the top 14, despite having one of the smaller budgets. It's a small town that there's not really a lot going on. It's a beautiful little part of the world, but there's not a lot going on. And they lean into that they are, no one works harder than us. And that comes through in the way that they play. They are tough, abrasive, with a bit of flair behind the scrum as well. They tick all the boxes, and the crowd are nuts. They have won the top 14 in the past, and I think one interesting line I would draw with the French teams is the teams that have won the top 14 before really want to try and progress in this competition. The ones that haven't won the top 14 tend to we can worry about the Champions Cup another time. We want to focus on the league first. So I think Castres will go for this, and I think they'll win.
What a delight it is, Biz News Tribe, to have someone with this depth of knowledge on you. And that's why I asked Tim. And Tim, again, I just want to acknowledge the fact that you always say yes, because as you told me, any opportunity to sit and yarn about rugby is great. So thanks for that.
I'm in my happy place.
Yeah, exactly. So thank you so much. I'll go with that. I'll go with your prediction there. Even though Benetton is, to Italy, what Toulouse and Leinster are to Ireland and France. You know, they've got a lot of internationals. I agree. I can't see them doing it on the road.
I think it'll be close. I do think it'll be close. And Benetton got some box office players. But
Absolutely. Don't you love those centres? My goodness, they're good.
Menoncello, if he were English, South African, New Zealander or whatever, he would be maybe the biggest. He might well be the biggest name in rugby on the planet.
Yeah, he'd be winning World Cups. Yeah. Proper. Yeah.
He's an amazing player.
Moving on to game number five, we've got La Rochelle at home against Munster.
What a game.
I'm so excited about this match. The storylines are, well, I mean, yeah, Ronan O'Gara won this competition with Munster. He's now head coach at La Rochelle, and he's won the competition twice as head coach of La Rochelle. He's outspoken, and he's brought that Munster ethos to France. What's really interesting is at the moment, this season, it's not going particularly well. And actually, there's a trend in rugby, and you're seeing this with your Springboks as well, with the flyers that are starting to come in. There's the pendulum is swinging towards a more attacking game, and Ronan O'Gara is sort of a little bit stuck in the past, and he's trying to play catch up. And Munster are a team that have again haven't been at the heights that they've been before, so it just sets up. This could be make or break for the season. This could be the defining moment for both of these teams, because a win here and they might be able to push on and do something. A loss and they're trying to pick up scraps for the rest of the season.
And for that reason, the Ronan O'Gara reason, La Rochelle is known as the Yellow Munster, right? So it's almost like a home game against your cousins kind of story, isn't it, Tim?
Munster fans, as you guys in South Africa know well, Munster fans travel better than pretty much any other set of fans. So there will be a lot of red in that stadium. But the La Rochelle Stadium has been sold out for over 5 years. Tickets are gold dust. That atmosphere, I've been lucky to work at a couple of, when they were getting to Challenge Cup finals and semi-finals, I worked at a couple of games there. I've not really heard an atmosphere like it anywhere else. The noise, the passion. Bearing in mind that the city is, I think it's the stats are something like one in every five people in the whole of La Rochelle is in that stadium
right.
on a game day. It's nuts.
I think the total population is 125,000, and the stadium seats 25,000.
Yeah, those sorts of numbers. Yeah, crazy.
And they have had 120 something sell-out crowds in a row. I mean, how extraordinary is that?
It's
120.
It's mad. And when you walk around it's a beautiful port with the two castles on the harbour and everyone sat out on the front, but there's black and yellow balloons on every shop, the butchers, everyone.
The boulangeries.
Dresses up their, they dress up themselves, they dress up their homes, the whole town, these cobbled streets, all turn black and yellow on a big game
awesome.
Day. So it's a very, very special occasion. So I'm hoping the game lives up to it.
And then, Rory, we're definitely going to need your insights on this one. We've got Leicester travelling to Scotstoun to take on the Glasgow Warriors.
Very, very tough one to call, Patrick, because, you know, Leinster are not an insignificant side. Coming to Glasgow, however, Ask the Lions is a different kettle of fish altogether. Glasgow have a very proud home record at Scotstoun. They were absolutely gutted when the Ospreys ended a 3.5-year winning home record just a few weeks ago. So, and Glasgow is welcoming back some of their players that are coming back in from both injury and the Six Nations with Scotland. Yeah, so I'm predicting Glasgow by one score, either 5 points or 7 points in a tight game. But their pride in their home record and the fact that they have this target on their back because they're URC champions now playing for the first time as champions in the Investec Champions Cup means that they come into this game with a lot of pride. But I think it'll be close. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I think this is going to be great. And this is the late game on the Saturday. And those last two games, La Rochelle Munster and Glasgow Leicester, proud historic teams. I think this is a really tough game. Leicester will bring it. They've won this competition before. They're stacked with internationals. Andre Pollard at 10. They're going to come and want to get away from Scotstoun with a win. I agree, it's going to be close. I think Glasgow will just edge it.
And going into our seventh game of the week, well, weekend, and also our first game on the Sunday, we've got Bordeaux at home against Ulster. Tim, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so these two games on the Sunday are... It'll be fun to watch the French teams and two of the favourites for the competition. But I think this could be ugly, the score lines, because these are two of the top seeds against two of the lower bottom seeds, and those teams going away from home. As you've seen in the URC, Ulster are in a period of transition. They've got a load of kids. They're just not going to live with the power of Bordeaux. I actually think, and it'd be interesting to see the teams when they're announced later in the week. Maybe they've already been announced by the time you're watching this. But I suspect Bordeaux might even rest Louis Bielbire. That's how confident. And maybe another couple of the French internationals, that may be how confident they are that they're gonna roll Ulster over.
Player of the Six Nations, and rightly so, in my view, Louis Bielbire. The guy was incredible. I think he scored 8 tries in the Six Nations. And yeah, and he's 21. How young is he, Tim?
Yeah, he's 21. So he played every game of the Six Nations, and he's played the two top 14 games since then. So he hasn't had a rest. He hasn't.
Right.
Well, obviously there were rest weeks within the Six Nations. So I've just got a feeling he won't be playing. We'll wait and see. But Bordeaux will win regardless of who they pick.
Yeah. And how does that go down with the Bordeaux fans, given the fact that the French teams are so big on their home games? Will the Bordeaux fans, you know, go along and understand that, or do they bay for seeing their best players?
Yeah, I think they will against Ulster. If it was they're potentially on a collision course with Toulon or Toulouse in the semi-final. Obviously, they wouldn't countenance that in a semi-final, but they'll understand it at home to Ulster. But then again, Bordeaux probably thought similar when Harlequins came to town in a quarter-final last year, and Harlequins managed to come away with a win. So They won't take anything for granted, but I think we're going to see a Bordeaux win by 20, 30 points.
I'll go with that.
And then our last game of the weekend, and Tim, like you mentioned, another French team at home, Toulouse against Sale. Is that also carnage?
Yeah, I mean, Sale do have some really good players. I live in Manchester, so I'm sort of in touch with some of the guys at the club, and they're going there to roll the dice and have a crack. They've got George Ford at 10, for example. They've got the Dupreer twins, the Curry twins. They've got some very, very good players, or, you know, English front row, international front row. So I think they'll give a better account of themselves than Ulster give against Bordeaux. But even so, it's Toulouse in Toulouse, and they are irresistible. And Toulouse are one of those teams where you might sort of be containing them and, oh, we're doing quite well after 20 minutes, and then... 3 minutes, bang, 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 you're 21 points behind. That's the kind of team Toulouse are. And when they turn it on, when they drop the hammer, they are irresistible.
They're deadly, and they're patient. So they kill you in the last 20, 25 minutes too.
They've got incredible players. So yeah, a Toulouse win probably by 20 again over Sale. But Sale are a handy team.
25, even though their form has been indifferent. I mean, the back row stars that you mentioned, those twin pairs of twins, insanely good. Tim, thank you so much. I've got to rush and catch a plane, and we've kept you for far too long. Safe travels to LA with your wife. Enjoy the time there. Patrick, thank you again for setting this up. And Biz News Tribe, make sure you get comfortable on the couch. This is an incredible weekend of rugby, and let's try and get our minds and our teeth into what is the Investec Champions Cup. Thank you again, Tim. Wonderful to have you on. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Yeah, thanks again, Tim. Definitely to the Biz News Tribe. Go check out his full video on the Egg Chasers rugby channel. I would have been on Monday, I said yesterday, I think earlier. Go check out that video. It's give some nice in-depth insights into the Champions Cup and what's happening there. Tim Cockers from Egg Chasers Rugby, thank you again so much. Rory Stain is our Biz News Rugby insider. And I'm Patrick Kidd from biznews.com.